Well, good afternoon. It is about 33 minutes past the hour of 12 o'clock. This is KFSK. You are listening to Borough Business with Hannah Floor. And today in Studio One, I have Glo Wallen.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Thanks for being here.
You bet.
And usually we have various people, but man, it is a busy end to summer and there's a lot of harbor stuff on the agenda.
Yeah,
so we're just going to hash it out. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
The first thing I wanted to talk about is this ordinance to sort of cement the way that derelict boats are dealt with. And I was really curious, right now in the ordinance, it would make boat owners pay to dispose of the boats, pay all of the costs associated. What happens right now?
Well, we do it, but we are limited in really the size of vessel that we can do kind of in-house. And so we've graduated up now. I've got a couple of boats that have gotten to be so cost prohibitive that, you know, smaller boats we can absorb into like the annual budget. But now we're talking, you know, as you know, we're adding about $250,000 to the budget to take care of a couple of boats. And
yeah.
So that's real money, you know, and I think it would behoove us to hire that lawyer to go after these people. Whereas prior to this, there have been such small amounts. We've been able to do it in house and it hasn't cost, you know, what these will cost. And so it's, you know, probably more expensive to hire a lawyer to go after somebody.
Right, than to absorb it.
Yeah.
Why does it cost $250,000 to get rid of these two boats? Are they just much larger?
Larger. And what we're dealing with is having to get them off island. And so I was just talking to Chris this morning about it, about how we're going to approach getting rid of an 80-foot wooden vessel. We're going to have to do it in open tops. So we'll crunch it up and put it in those big dumpsters that I have down in the South Harbor. They're mm-hmm. they're bigger than that. They are pretty much like a 20-foot, you know, AML container right. without a top.
Right. And so you have to hire some sort of contractor to crunch up the boat.
Yeah.
And then put it in there.
Before, we've done it with, you know, kind of collaboration with Public Works, where we'll get the boat out and then they'll help us, or we'll hire a smaller operation to help us, you know, get it up to the landfill. But now with something this size, it's going to take a lot of time, and so it means people and mm-hmm. it can't go out through the regular garbage stream. So
yeah.
That's where the costs come in.
How do you decide that a boat is derelict?
Pretty much when the owner quits talking to me and quits paying their bill. And
okay.
But even at that, sometimes we have owners that just really don't know what to do. In the past, you know, prior to probably about 15 years ago, we had a disposal site out in Frederick Sound that was on the charts, and it was where you could, if you bled all the systems and you removed anything that might contaminate,
mm-hmm.
it was legal to take them out there and then sink them. Primarily, this was wood, mm-hmm. you know, wood vessels, and they just kind of became a reef, and then slowly Mother Nature took its course. That about 15 years ago became we can't do that. And so
why not?
Just environmental issues. Mm-hmm. And I understand. I mean, the vast amount of boats that that could go there. Also, we have a lot more steel boats and a lot of fiberglass boats
right.
that don't melt the way wood does.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just at that point. So what happens now, or maybe boats get abandoned because of owners don't even know what to do with them when they
right.
get to a certain level of derelictness.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of jerry rigging that goes along, and people keep boats running and operating
mm-hmm.
for as long as they can. But life happens sometimes to people, and then all of a sudden that boat hasn't moved in a couple years, and maybe they are still paying their bill, but now we have to tow it or, you know, those yeah. kind of things. So,
and it becomes too expensive to get rid of for the owner, perhaps.
Yeah. Yep. And it's a challenge.
Yeah. I heard a story recently about somebody was telling me about watching a boat owner just chainsaw a fiberglass boat up into chunks that would fit in the back of his truck so that he could bring it up to the baler.
That's how we do it. That is literally how we do it. Yeah. Steel.
Steel's
actually less problematic because we have a fellow in Southeast that comes through all our communities and will gather, you know, crunch cars and metal, you know, and so we can stockpile that up fairly easily. And when he comes through every couple of years, then unload it that way.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, it's definitely a part of the business that is not very sexy.
All right, moving on to more harbor business. I don't know if this one is sexy either, but we're going to talk about it. Looking at the Tidelands issues, last assembly meeting 2 weeks ago, the assembly voted to sell a second smaller parcel of borough-owned Tidelands on Dock Street to Brock Snyder of Island Refrigeration. They had voted earlier this spring, I believe, to sell him a bigger chunk. And today the assembly is going to be voting on whether to approve the price and details of that sale. This is the third sale of borough Tidelands in the last year. And in the past, the policy had been to lease the Tidelands to marine-related businesses, and then that rent money would go to the Harbor Department.
Right.
Now, the money from these few past sales is going to the Harbor Department. I'm just curious how that change is affecting the department and how you think about budgeting and planning.
Well, just to just kind of start from square one, back in the 80s, the Harbor Board recognized that we needed to protect a portion of the waterfront for marine-related businesses. And so this is the way it came. The Harbor developed it. They bought it. They developed it and kept it as a, you know, their idea was a marine industrial park. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it's done. And so now with the sale, I think the Harbor Board was supportive of that because it was a marine related business. But there also has been a promise of this marine overlay that will kind of solidify that desire to keep a portion of the waterfront marine related. And I think that is really the key to this. And doing the follow up with that marine overlay, I think will really be, you know, a positive direction to just make sure that it doesn't get, you know, purchased by somebody that's going to develop it that with something that doesn't really necessarily have to be on the water. So that's where that all started from. And this has just been a natural progression. And, you know, the other side of it is the harbor has used that facility for revenue. I mean, it's always been a revenue generator. And so we've had to reorganize a little bit of the properties that we still are under the department. And there's a big part of our fleet that needs marine storage on the beach side of a highway, if you will, because a lot of these pieces of equipment are too large to go down the highway without a special DOT permit and some kind of an organizational around it where you have a, you know, wide load and you have to do it to certain area times. And it just is problematic when somebody's been fishing out west and they come home and it's a Friday and, you know, yada, yada, you can't get permits and it takes time. And so that's been one of the selling points, I think, for Petersburg is that we're very user-friendly towards that portion of the fishing industry.
So
that's what the approach is now. It was always planned for, but now it's really, as you notice, filling up because we're relocating all of these other storage locations to that spot.
Is that marine storage something that is less common in other towns around Southeast?
I believe it is.
Interesting.
Especially adjacent to some place that you can pick this equipment off, the drive down, the
right.
bulkhead. You know, it's kind of a one-stop shop.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a really nice thing. And so we have people that will fish their way west and then fish their way west back to Southeast. And like every other year, we'll get a piece of their equipment. So they'll long line out to, say, you know, Seward or Kodiak, and then they'll pick their seine gear up and then they'll fish that, you know, back and forth that way. So we have a lot of that kind of creativity.
Interesting.
And it's based on the fact that we have, you know, decent amount of storage available at a reasonable price.
Mm-hmm. So making Petersburg appealing to the fishing fleet was a good trade-off in your mind for letting go of some of that income that comes in every year from leasing.
Yeah.
And I should say I spoke with Debbie Thompson, I think last week, about that marine overlay. And it sounds like it's going to be maybe a month or two before they have that finished. But that's sort of a zoning with sets of restrictions about how all of that can be used. So once they have that in place, it'll go before the assembly. They can vote on the details of that. So that should be coming up this fall. All right. The last fisheries and harbor related thing on the agenda tonight is a vote whether or not to send a letter of opposition to NOAA and NIMS. They are looking at listing the Gulf of Alaska Chinook salmon under the Endangered Species Act. And I have a lot of background on this that I'm just going to run through real quick before I ask you about what you've heard from fishermen about this. But so the Wild Fish Conservancy, which is a Washington state-based environmental group, filed a petition with the National Marine Fisheries Service to list Alaska Chinook salmon, king salmon, as threatened or endangered under the Endangered Species Act. And this is the same group that brought the lawsuit against Alaska trawlers, saying that a population of 73 endangered resident killer whales in Washington state depended on those king salmon that Alaska trawlers were catching. And then last year, a lower court ruling ordered the closure of commercial trawling for king salmon. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals then issued a stay last year. That was right before the trolling season got started. That allowed most trawlers to fish. And then the court ruling hadn't been thrown out, which meant that the future of the fishery was in doubt. And then this last Friday, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals partially reversed that lower court ruling, saying that trawlers can fish. That is no longer in question. So then this petition to list king salmon as threatened or endangered is just like another prong of the Wild Fish Conservancy's king salmon advocacy. And that's part of a longer process. This is the first step. It's different from the troll lawsuit in that it would potentially affect any gear type that catches or intercepts kings in any way. But it would also potentially affect communities because of river salmon habitat, roads, residential construction, stuff like that. So that's the long backstory. I hope I've gotten it all correct. And the public has until September 6th to weigh in, which is where this letter from the assembly comes in. I want to hear what you've heard from fishermen. I know you chat with fishermen all day, every day at the Harbor Master. What have fishermen been saying to you about this potential listing as under the Endangered Species Act?
Well, you know, it scares the pants off of everybody, and it should scare the pants off of everybody in this community. It isn't, so just this celebration. I mean, a lot of guys aren't in town, and let's preface that I'm a daughter of a troller. So one of those things that, you know, that the ruling that came out on Friday was a huge win because it's put to bed and hopefully will take some of the, pull the rug out from under this latest one, because if king salmon become endangered, it will affect every single aspect of our lives here in Petersburg, whether you're a fisherman or not. You know, if you like to go sport fishing, you know, what that means when it's an endangered species is a whole different thing than, you know, that if we just are protecting certain rivers like the Stikine or various rivers in Southeast, if they're you know, across the board an endangered species, we'll treat them like we do whales. And yeah, that would affect everything we do. So it would probably be one of those things that would really change Petersburg as we know it. So, that, you know, that's the big elephant in the room for everybody in town, I believe. So, yeah, fishermen have been saying this for years. Yeah. This is not anything new. We have been targeted by, you know, a lot of different groups that they have no skin in the game. You know, you go on that particular site and they've got totally obscure fights that they're battling all over the world, and I don't know which ones will succeed, but if they succeed at a few, I suppose, then they're doing their job. And so this one just hits close to home. So everybody's still pretty scared about it, I guess is the answer. But Friday's ruling was definitely gave a glimmer of hope.
Yeah.
So
is that what you've heard to a person? You haven't heard anybody coming in talking about how they think, you know, maybe it's a good thing, any gray area, it's to a person, people are
well, you know,
out.
I even talked to our lobbyist about it. The harbor pays for the portion of the borough's lobbyist. And he, you know, he even recognizes the fact that, you know, I mean, we talk a lot about it. Potentially, well, this would be one thing that you could hold over, say, the trawlers out west, their heads, because they couldn't, you know, they would have to really change the way they might have to, you know, do business.
Because they're known for having a fair amount of bycatch.
Right. But what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So that happening would be, it would hurt us more than it would hurt them.
Yeah. There's a lot of complicated potential outcomes.
Yeah, you have to look at what that Endangered Species Act really says. Yeah. You can't harass, you can't maim, you can't kill, but you also can't even, you know, change, or, you know, you can't, king salmon would be, it would be really hard to not influence a king salmon's life with any of our other gear groups.
Right. So. Could the threatened endangered listing affect harbor infrastructure in any way, how you go about dredging, that sort of thing?
Well, you know, it would, because a lot of our, you know, facility is geared towards, you know, just like I talked about the storage issues, and it's geared for supporting that industry. And if that industry ceased to exist, then we'd have to change directions, I would imagine.
Right. You wouldn't need the harbor so much for fishing boats. All right. Well, we have a caller here.
Oh.
I'm going to get him on the air. And caller, will you just let everybody know who you are and go ahead and make your comment or ask your question?
Hello.
All right, you're on the air.
This is Wally McDonald. Going back to your previous topic there about the Marine Industrial Park, I tuned in kind of late, so if you already covered this, I apologize. But the revenue derived from the sale of those properties, does that go to the harbor, or does it go into the general fund?
Well, it was originally the purchase prices for each one was an individually negotiated, and it took a little bit, but yes, now those property, the sale value is coming to the enterprise fund, the harbor enterprise.
Okay, that's great, because I don't want to see my stall rent go up because you have less income.
That's what was going to happen. We made we definitely talked that over with the assembly, and they saw the wisdom in that. And so far, I believe that this latest sale will as well.
Yeah, I spoke with Debbie about that, and all three sales are supposed to go to the Harbor Department. And I think that is then going to be addressed in the Marine Overlay, where that would make it standard. But that would have to obviously go before the assembly and be approved before it is standard.
Correct.
Very good. Good work. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Wally. All right. Is there anything else you have to say about Harbor Life?
Well, it's been busy and, you know, every year is unique and this year is no different. But yeah, here we are at the end of August and guys are starting to switch out gear and here we go to the next thing. So,
yep.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. Bye.